Welcome to the UK Investor Magazine podcast, the latest on shares, markets and investments, now available on your Amazon Alexa.
Hello and welcome to the UK Investor Magazine podcast, now also available on the UK Investor Magazine mobile app. For today's podcast, we're going to be taking a deep dive into AIM-listed GenIP and how it is enhancing the process of technology transfer. We're going to be looking at technology transfer in some detail and how research institutions are facilitating the movement of discoveries through to commercialization. And to do that, we're very kindly joined today by Dr. David Gann, who is the non-executive director of GenIP. Dr. David Gann, thank you very much for being on the podcast today.
Oh, you're very welcome. Nice to be with you.
Thank you very much. So I've outlined what we're going to be discussing today. But before we get into it, please, would you be able to give us an introduction, first of all, to yourself and a little bit about your role at GenIP, please?
Yeah, well, happy to do that. First of all, about me. Well, I've been an academic in one role or another all my life, 40 years of it, Professor of Innovation and Entrepreneurship at Imperial College and then at Oxford University. And I've been heavily involved in developing ideas from deep technology and science to market, leading some startups, coaching many startups over that time. I've also been the chairman of the Atomic Energy Authority for the UK government and currently chairing the new UK Industrial Fusion Solutions, which you may call a very big startup because we are just building the organization to create the world's first fusion power station in the UK. And all of this involves developing new ideas, innovating, and finding routes where you can create that value in markets. So that's my expertise.
Thank you. Thank you very much. So, you know, the first question that we have here, and it's about the evolution of technology transfer, David, because, of course, you've co-founded a number of university spin-outs. You're, of course, on the opposite side now, to some extent, with your involvement in venture capital as well. So you're seeing from both aspects, from both sides of technology transfer. In your experience and how things have progressed, what have the main changes been in technology transfer over the past 10 or 20 years?
Well, I think the last 20 years are a good period to look at in the UK. 20 years ago, we hardly had a venture capital market. Long-term risk-taking patient capital in the UK. The mid-noughties saw us float the tech transfer office of Imperial College 2006 on the London Stock Exchange to create a war chest so we could invest in our pipeline. And arguably, that was one of the real drivers of developing more venture capital opportunities in the UK. Since then, the degree of professionalisation has spread and increased throughout the UK's leading universities and many others. And tech transfer offices are pretty savvy places in the leading ones. And I think that's a good sign. Another good signal is that some of the top US venture funds have located offices in the UK because they believe the pipeline of new ideas coming to market is rich enough and deep enough for them to spend time looking at and thinking about investing in. So there are a number of indicators that the last 20 years we've seen significant progress. Of course, you know, the benchmarks here are the US, and it's not universal across the US. It's the East Coast and particularly the West Coast. Everyone always dreams of creating the next Silicon Valley. And these days, you do well to bear in mind what's happening in Shanghai and Shenzhen and Hangzhou. Several regions in China are burgeoning in this regard. And indeed, other Asian countries, particularly Singapore, doing well in areas like fintech. So we have improved in the UK. But it's a competitive landscape that doesn't stand still. And there's still a lot to do here and a lot more capabilities need to be developed if we're going to realize the value from what is still a top-rate research science base in the top universities and in some of the big research organizations in the country. So there's a lot of opportunity still that's left, I think, on the table. We don't get it out there fast enough, and we perhaps come on to talk about whether we grow our startups to the size and at the rate speed that we would really like to. So the glass is half full. If we're marking the homework, we've done well, but there's still more to do. The last 20 years has been an exciting time with some bumps in the road and some ups and downs.
So that's a really interesting point that you make there, David. Very much that, the UK is a center of innovation, but you've highlighted there that there is some room for improvement. What are the main challenges that research institutions are facing, and how may GenAI be able to fit in this and help facilitate some improvement in the technology transfer industry in the UK?
Well, one thing, if you're running a research organization, you're almost looking in two directions. You're looking at contributing to deep science and engineering and technology and furthering the bodies of knowledge. And in universities, you're educating students still from all over the world. And that's putting ideas into the public domain largely and contributing to the public good. And then at the same time, you want to be able to protect some intellectual property and take that out into the market and let your research leaders who've got great ideas have those ideas flow. And that means, being much more savvy about what is commercial and what isn't. And we're getting much better at that. The best publishing academics are often the best entrepreneurial ones as well, and the ones that raise the most funding for their research. But one thing's obvious: you can't do it all in the same year, and we need to give some time for our research leaders to get their ideas in shape for commercialization. And then we need mechanisms whereby they're not the sole ones responsible for making it happen. The best scientists aren't necessarily the best managers. And one thing about GenIP, which I really like, is the part of the business called Vortec, which is looking at what skills and capabilities in the management might be needed and how do we find those people to take ideas out there. And we don't want to be a drain on the research talent. We want great managers who understand deep tech and deep science-based companies to be able to develop those ideas with chief scientific officers who've founded the idea in the first place and then create great companies. And so GenIP has a big role to play actually in trying to match talent into early stage startups. That's one part of what the business can do and offer more fully across the UK.
Thank you. So building on that point there, David, when we're looking at GenIP, of course, from an investor standpoint, an investor is going to be looking for financial success, and that's going to be one measurement of GenIP. But how do you feel in the wider context of the areas that GenIP are operating in? What are the other forms of measurement and impact and value to institutions that you feel GenIP should use as a measurement tool and way marker for their operations?
Yeah, that's good. So actually, part of the core business is to provide valuations of early stage startups. Notoriously difficult to do, and something that investors are always squabbling about with tech transfer offices and with founders. And it's really helpful that GenIP can come in with a toolkit to assemble valuations at an early stage and to give a benchmark of what the idea might be worth. I was a little bit skeptical before I joined the business that this was going to be possible, but I'm starting to understand how we're going to build up better capabilities. And I think GenIP has done more than 7,000 early stage startup valuations now across the globe. And this is a really good sign because it builds the capability to say this is where we think the idea's got to and what it's worth now. And that gives the management of the organization the chance to assess what does it need to do next. And I think, we often talk about pivoting and pivoting into a better market or a market where you can grow faster, or changing your product mix in a market. And I think having a valuation baseline is really helpful in providing evidence for those discussions. I wish 10 years ago, when I had a startup, that we were growing fast, I had had better understanding of that myself. So I think GenIP has a number of tools here that will contribute to better decision making in areas of quite profound uncertainty. And I think probably areas where sometimes the risk and the lack of understanding value becomes all too much, and early stage ventures don't get the support that they need. So I'm hoping GenIP's evidence-based valuations, as well as matching in talent, are going to help companies substantiate themselves and tilt into the right market opportunities more swiftly than hitherto.
Yes, that very interesting. I think that point there about applying evaluation to technology and new discoveries, it does give it that real world appeal to potential investors and companies that are going to take that technology on. So, David, to finish off now, this point is very much looking at the bigger picture of artificial intelligence in general, of course, generative AI. Now, people have been speaking in some detail about efficiencies within businesses, maybe able to reduce headcount within their companies. But from where you're sitting and the experience that you have, what do you think could be some of the most surprising benefits of AI over the next 5 years? Are there any hidden potentials that you can see within the technology that may have benefits from industry which you feel maybe aren't out there in the mainstream at the moment?
I'm sure there are actually. Again, keep a healthy dose of skepticism about some of the things. People listening to this, please don't just think AI is going to solve everyone's problem. We know it's not. It might create more. But I am actually one of the people with the, again, glass half full. I think there's a huge amount of potential now we're starting to see. The low-hanging fruit, yes, efficiency, chatbots instead of call centers, those sort of things in consumer-facing markets are going to improve communications between users and businesses. But look, in early stage venturing, where are we going to start to understand? I think we're going to be able to get more fine-grained understanding of how technologies are shaping their way in different markets. There's tons of data out there about early stage take-up. If you start processing patent data, for example, and citation data on that, you can start to see which regions of the world are getting deep into areas in new materials or whatever field you're in. And the great thing about AI is that if it's used properly, it improves predictability. You can see that already. The weather forecasts don't always get it right, but they have much more predictive capability now because AI helps them crunch through large data sets and complex models than they had 10, 15 years ago. You see the same in medical diagnostics. I have no reason to think we won't see the same in understanding how technology roadmaps are developing into different markets and improving the focus then on where management in tech startups apply their efforts, focus their small, often investments, and build out in their companies. So I think GenIP is in a good place to offer more services as it grows. AI in general will be in the heart of some of this, and I'm positive that we'll see more use in specialist areas that will help investors and people growing their companies to deliver better value and get richer, as well as probably helping get technology that's much needed out into the market.
Thank you. That's been really insightful, David. Thank you very much for being on today.
You're very welcome. Thank you very much.
And thank you very much to everyone for listening. Thank you.
We hope you enjoyed listening to the UK Investor Magazine podcast. Please do share the podcast, and we really value any reviews and comments you leave us in your chosen podcast player. The views presented by the hosts and guests of the UK Investor Magazine podcast are in no way investment advice, and please remember all investment involves risk.